This podcast is about your future. What if the next years of your life can be the best years of your life? When full-time work becomes optional, you'll have the time to do all the things you've always wanted to do, if only you had the time, and soon you will. But to make the most of it, you'll need to be well prepared, and that goes well beyond your financial planning. Each week, your host, Joe Casey, is inviting you into conversations with his guests to bring you insights, inspiration, and practical ideas to design your new life, a life you'll build around what matters most to you and on your own terms. Let's get started.
I know you're busy and can't always listen to the latest episodes of the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, so this is a best of episode with short clips from our best conversations in the third quarter of 2022 to give you a chance to listen in, sample them. And if you are interested in listening to the full conversations, just click on the links in the show notes. If you're listening to the podcast, you're probably planning for retirement. But there's a version of it that you might want to also prepare for. Richard Eisenberg, formerly of Next Avenue, calls it unretirement. It's not about going back to work. It's about keeping work in the mix as you go on to retirement. And it gives you actually the best of both worlds. You keep a lot of the benefits of work, but you also keep the freedom that retirement offers.
So retirement is not a singular thing these days. And from what I've read, you're creating an interesting version of retirement on retirement. What's behind your idea of the unretired life?
Yeah, well, thank you. So I call it unretirement. Sometimes people call it semi-retirement. For me, what it means is I left my full-time job. I was the managing editor of Next Avenue. I enjoyed that very much. I was there for 10 years, but I felt it was time to give myself time to do some other things. So in January of this year, I unretired. And by that, I mean I work part-time as a writer for Next Avenue and also now for Market Watch. And I do that sometimes. And I spend some of my other time volunteering and mentoring and traveling when I can, seeing my family when I can, reading, relaxing. I just feel like I now am able to do some of the things I couldn't do when I had a full-time job.
And what's the best part of your new life so far?
I guess I would say it's really the freedom and the flexibility that I feel I'm getting right now. The freedom to decide how I want to spend my days and who I want to be working with, and the flexibility to change each day. And some days are going to be working all day long, whether I'm reporting an article or writing one. And other days are going to be volunteering or mentoring. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the mentoring that I was doing this past summer. But I love the idea that I know vaguely what each week is going to look like, and I make myself a schedule, but I also know that things are going to change.
And that freedom and flexibility is very appealing. And I'm sure it's tempting for people to be considered just full retirement. But you decided to keep working the mix on your own terms, continuing to do writing, as you mentioned. Could you walk us through your thought process and your decision to keep working as part of it?
Sure. Well, there are a few things that went into it, and it is something I'd been thinking about for quite a while. And I actually told my bosses at Next Avenue last October that this is what I had planned to do starting in January so that they had some notice about it. The reason I want to keep writing and reporting is I enjoy it. And I like to write about personal finances and about aging and about retirement. And I didn't want to give that up. So I want to find a way to continue to do that and also explore other places where I might be able to write and edit on other topics as well. The extra income is helpful. It's always nice to have some income coming in retirement, aside from one day I'll start claiming Social Security. I haven't started doing that yet. I am lucky to have some pensions from former jobs, so I'm using those. But mostly it's just that I knew I wanted to continue doing what I liked to do before, just in a different way. I like to be busy. I know that if I didn't have something on my calendar for most days of the week, I would get upset with myself. I would feel frustrated. And so I knew that continuing to work would give me an anchor and that I could then build the rest of my days around that.
Next up is Marjorie Fox. She's a JD and CFP, and she shared with us her insights on what women need to prepare for differently for retirement. And I just want to point out that you might think if you're not a woman, this may not apply to you or be of interest, but I would encourage you to listen if you have women who are important to you in your life, it's a helpful perspective to have.
What disadvantages do women face in planning for retirement?
There are too many, I'm afraid. Being a woman who counseled women and men, couples, singles, and have lived through certainly some of this myself, I see several, unfortunately. The first is fewer financial resources. Because of fewer years in the workforce, of course, parenting children, care of aging parents and other relatives, etc., and because of lower earnings on average. We've all heard that for every dollar a man earns, a woman earns 82.3 cents. New data concerns me, and it was in the Wall Street Journal. It indicated that the pay gap emerges between men and women soon after they graduate from college and join the workforce, even among those receiving the same degree from the same school. So it's not like it's behind us. Another, number two, in my mind, women are single for many more years than men. And that's because two things. Women tend to outlive their spouses by 7.5 years. They live longer, 2.5 years on average, marry older men, 5 years on average. But also because once widowed, women remarry less frequently than men do. As the old saying goes, women mourn, men replace. I'd add that at least some research shows that women lack the financial literacy that men have regarding, and maybe it's an interest that they lack, but regarding investments and even retirement planning. Or it may be that men just have more confidence. There was one study that said it really wasn't capability, it was confidence that men had. Finally, on my list, I'm glad I don't have any more, fewer outside interests, hobbies, etc. Now, I have no scientific evidence of this. I'll just use myself. And because of the demands of their jobs and their families, juggling that during their working years, there's less of an opportunity, less time to develop hobbies and other interests. I played competitive tennis as a teenager, but haven't played for decades. I may take up pickleball one of these days, but smaller court, I like slower ball. But really the only purpose, passion I had that I carried into retirement was serving as chair of my church's endowment, which I still do. It's my baby, so to speak. But that's certainly a part-time, part-of-the-year kind of thing. And it's not really a purpose enough for me in retirement.
Just a warning to people in your locale to watch out for you on the pickleball courts. You're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, I keep postponing starting. That book is my excuse, but watch out, yes.
So how about the flip side? What advantages do women bring to planning for retirement?
Well, after I say a few things, I want you to add to them because I'm really frustrated. I couldn't make up as many advantages as I could disadvantages. Social connections, I think, are an advantage for women. And I follow your lead in chapter 4 of your book, where you cite research that women will have 50% less risk of early death. I'm sorry, it isn't women. It's those with social connections will have reduced risk of death, depression, cognitive decline, and I think dementia you mentioned. And you also cited, you did cite research that loneliness, which you define, and I agree, as the lack of social connections, the absence of, tends to be higher among men than it is among women. And that women are more likely than men to cull their friends. I've been doing that.
Many of the people I work with as a coach who are heading into retirement tell me they want to make a difference. And they're often thinking, as we all do, about how can you make a difference in a big way? How can you have a big impact? But there are other ways to do it as well. And my guest, Brad Aronson, shared with us how the little things can have a big impact over time. And there's something we can do each and every day to make a difference. I should warn you, if you're driving, walking in a city street, hang gliding, bungee jumping, or other things that retirement wisdom listeners often do, this one you want to probably pause and save for later.
So since your book is really about taking action,
I was wondering if there's a call to action for our listeners that you'd like us to start with.
Sure. You know what? Let's do a quick exercise, if that's okay, that we had talked about earlier. I'd like everyone to think of someone you're thankful to have in your life. Maybe they did something small for you. Maybe they did something huge, but let's just think of that person. All right. So now I'm going to do something risky at the start of a podcast. If you are not driving, please take out your phone or pull up an email and send a quick note to that person. Like, we're only going to spend 30 seconds. So it can be, you know, I appreciate having you in my life. Thanks for what you've done. But let's just send that quick note.
Great. Thanks.
All right. So, I mean, basically, this ties to the call to action. In under a minute, we just made someone's day. And it was that easy. And what I found in writing this book is that sometimes we're overwhelmed because there's so many problems in the world and the news just amplifies that. But really, each of us is empowered to take a little step and do something. Sending an acknowledging text message to someone, asking someone how they're doing, sending a card. That can have a big impact. And that's my call to action, that we should all take that step and do something.
There's no shortage of questions to grapple with as you're planning for retirement. One of the bigger ones is, where will you live? And it's complicated because there are many factors that perhaps we don't consider at first. And if we're married or in a serious relationship, our spouse or significant other may have entirely different preferences or views. But the good news is, there's a tool for that. And I spoke with Sylvia Ascarelli of MarketWatch about their free tool that helps you do your homework and identify some things that may not be on your radar today, but should be.
Where to retire? Such a big question. And in your opinion, what are the major factors people should be considering when they're deciding where to retire?
Can I afford it is the obvious one. I think there's a lot of other considerations. Why do I want to go there? Am I being realistic about the place? That vacation isn't the same as everyday life. I know family is a big consideration for a lot of people. So I would just caution everyone to have some heart-to-heart conversations about expectations. Your adult children are busy with their own lives and their families, and they may not be planning to stick around where you're moving to. And then you move there, are you going to drive each other crazy by being too enmeshed with their lives? Do they want you to do lots of babysitting? Do you want to do lots of babysitting? Are you good with being on call all the time for that? Or the flip side, do you want to spend lots of time with the grandkids and then they have all kinds of restrictions on what you can or can't do with them or even what you're allowed to feed them? Not everyone is okay with grandparents spoiling the grandkids. And to me, that's a big question for people as they think about moving.
Such a great series of points about the expectations and really having those honest discussions realistically about how is it going to work and what does each party expect? Because sometimes we make assumptions and they're not exactly in line with what other people are thinking.
That's true. And I think we've all heard stories of people who've been disappointed or have been driven crazy by their parents, or the kids have driven the grandparents, the adult parents, their own parents or the grandparents crazy.
Very easy to drive others crazy. So that's a great point. It's a great point to think about it and have those honest and open discussions about it. So what are some of the things that people should be thinking about, but often aren't?
You know, I think we all romanticize certain places. But for all of us, no matter our age, to me, the big question is, how am I going to build my personal network of friends? We know that socialness, having friendships is really important for our cognitive, for our brains, and to keep us healthy and happy and to ward off things like dementia, which we all want to avoid. And this isn't just for I'm moving in retirement. I had a long conversation with a millennial at my local farmer's market on Saturday, and she was debating whether moving to this suburban area where I live would be a good fit for her as a single woman. And yeah, her mom is here and that is kind of good, but going back to driving people crazy. But it was a lot about how are you going to find your tribe? So what activities will you do to meet people? If you don't go to church, what will you do? Do you use Meetup? Or do you have a passion that will get you introduced to the local community in some way? So MarketWatch published a piece a while back that I found really interesting. It was about a couple who thought they'd ride out the pandemic at their weekend house along a river and then
rather than in the city, and being there 24/7 highlighted what they didn't really like about the area that they hadn't really had to deal with before. So they're like, okay, we should move. And they had fond memories of an area in Rhode Island where on the coast where they'd lived years and years before. So they started house hunting online and ended up buying something, moved. And then once they were there, realized that it was actually hard to break into that community or the part of the community they were living in, that people had been there for decades and they didn't need to befriend a newcomer. And so maybe it would have been different if they'd been in a different neighborhood or a different part of the area. But then when a longtime friend got sick and that friend lived in yet another place they had lived in before, and they realized how important that community and that to that their personal community in that area where they'd lived decades ago, how important that still was to them and how they still had friends there. And so they made yet another move and they're very happy. But this person concluded that community is more important than that beautiful view of the ocean. And I think that's something we can all keep in mind. Unfortunately for them, it was just a very expensive way to learn that. I'm going to flag another MarketWatch story. We had an interesting piece a while back from someone who retired to a small southern town and also had to come to grips with what that really entailed and how open and welcoming it might be or not be and how to break in. Finally, I'm going to say, I know everybody wants low taxes, low costs, but the right spot is more than just low taxes. Think about medical care, because as we age, we need more of it. And will you be able to get to the hospital or the specialist easy? Who's going to drive you there if you can't drive? And long drives, I think, are a lot less pleasant as we age. Can I throw in one other thing? My colleague in Florida tells me about the short life of roofs there and the high insurance costs, which is not something I would expect because it's not part of my world. So just don't expect that the things that you have where you live now carry over to some other part of the country. Just ask a lot of questions before you pack up, because unfortunately, a bad move is an expensive mistake.
Even if you're not planning to retire early, I think there's a lot we can all learn from people who are involved in the FIRE movement, which is financial independence, retire early. And this conversation is with a gentleman in San Francisco who retired over 10 years ago at the age of, wait for it, 34. You might be saying, what could I learn from that person? Well, I believe a lot. He publishes his work, including a new book, By This, Not That, under the pseudonym Sam Dogan. And we had a great conversation about what retirement life offers and why work can still be part of it.
So the FIRE movement, financial independence, retire early, some in the FIRE community and beyond that have what I'll call a purist view on early retirement. It's not really retirement if you're doing work or quote-unquote work-like things. You've coined a phrase I like, fake retirement. So who's a fake retiree?
I love using the word, I just coined it fake retirement, because since leaving in 2012, I've definitely been, you know, badgered and criticized by people saying, you're not retired. You're still writing on your blog and, you know, you probably make some online income and whatever. And after a while, I said, you know what? You're exactly right. I like to embrace the criticism. You're exactly right. These articles don't write themselves. This podcast, there's no machine AI speaking right now. It's just me. So I have to spend this time. So you're absolutely right. I am not retired. I am a fake retiree. And I'm proud of it because I'm doing the things that I want to do post-work, post a steady paycheck, post-subsidized healthcare benefits, which is so important, by the way, because we spend $2,200 a month on unsubsidized healthcare benefits. And so I wanted to embrace the criticism because I totally see it.
An increasing number of people are retiring solo these days, but many of us are not. So if you're married, how do you evolve the relationship as you retire? Because a lot changes and you need to keep evolving. I had a great conversation with the co-author of the new book, The Go-Giver Marriage, Anna Mann, who co-wrote this book with her husband, John David Mann. He was the co-author of the very popular business parable classic, The Go-Giver, published back in 2005. And that's the point that they hatched the idea of, boy, wouldn't it be great to write something together that shared these principles and how they can be applied to marriage?
So you mentioned the fifth secret. I was wondering if you could take a look at the other four and just tell me which one you think to be most critical or perhaps the most challenging? And just your thoughts on it.
I'll do both. I'll give you the one that I think is really critical, or at least it's a very significant one. It changes marriages very quickly. And that is appreciation. You know, when you're a young child and you have a grandparent who says, look at you, you read that book all by yourself. And a parent who says, wow, you are such a big boy or big girl. And I am so proud of you. You just like are taller. You're immediately like, yeah, I got it going on. And mom thinks so. It's the most important thing to be witnessed. It is something that people want so desperately, they'll work for free to be acknowledged. And acknowledgement can never be underestimated because it's a lifelong need. There's childhood developmental needs, and then there's adult developmental needs, and they aren't too dissimilar. People still have that narcissistic need to be seen, to be witnessed, to be understood, and to be heard. And so the first secret, which is appreciation, is a simple one. It's take 3 to 4 opportunities every day to observe something about your partner that you appreciate and love, and then to tell them that, to take the time to stop them in their tracks. And we're not talking about passing phrases like, gosh, you're looking pretty today, hon. That's a really nice thing to say to your partner. But at the same time, it's a passing comment. It's not really one of those like stop you in your tracks. I really, when I listen to you talk to our children, I feel so grateful that you're their mother. You have so much understanding and you're just so present with them. That's the kind of thing that makes you go, wow, yeah. And when appreciation is not only authentic, but constant, and in our relationship, John and I, it's so present and so authentic that it actually creates a whole new sense of your sense of self. Who am I in the world is really built by the people around us. And yes, it shouldn't be entirely built by the people around us. We really have to hold our self-esteem on our own. But at the same time, when you have somebody who's rooting for you and telling you all the ways that they appreciate you and think you're terrific, it's very powerful. And I just got a letter from a woman in Zurich, Switzerland. She found the book at an expat bookstore in Switzerland. And she said to me, as she wrote, she said, I was blown away by the book first, but second, I put all the secrets in place. And within 10 days, my husband was literally, they've been married 24 years. She said, my husband was following me around the house saying, what are you up to? You're changing. Something's going on. You're being so sweet to me. I mean, it was like, she said, it's not like I'm not normally sweet to him, but she said, I was really appreciating him. I was really believing in him, letting him know all the ways that I see him. So that's the first that I would say is very powerful. The second, which I really love as well, but it's a difficult secret for people to wrap around, is the third secret. And it's called the secret to allow. Now, a lot of people will say, allow? What do you mean? What am I allowing? Am I allowing bad behavior? Am I allowing them to skate and never pick up the house? What am I allowing? We like to say that everyone wants to see their marriage as a 50-50 negotiation, and they're always looking for it to be fair. And so people have what we call the little scorekeeper, and they pull it out when it's convenient. And yet there's nothing fair about marriage. There will be moments when one or the other of you is sick, one or the other of you has a broken leg, something catastrophic has happened to one of your children, and you are both frantically worrying. There's going to be times when there's terrific challenges. And while you may be in a hum of she does this and I do that, and that's kind of the balance of the relationship, when she suddenly has a compound fracture in her leg and can't get a glass of water across the room and no longer can make dinner, you might have to pick up the slack. And that's what allow really is. It's allowing for the fact that there will be moments where you have to pull more weight in the relationship in order to keep the household running, in order to keep the kids on track. And sometimes it just isn't fair. She just might not be able to do those things, or he might not be able to. People lose their jobs. Their parent suddenly is sick and they've got to go to another state and take care of them. Things happen. And you have to be willing to cover the territory, pick up the slack, and allow for that. So that's that secret. We call it the for better or for worse, the for richer, for poorer. in sickness and in health secret.
Thanks for listening to these short clips from the best conversations of our podcast in the third quarter of 2022. If you want to explore these episodes further, if you missed any, you can find the links to the full episodes in the show notes. If you'd like to explore our content further, go to retirementwisdom.com. You'll find all our episodes and guests across 5 seasons of these conversations. It's a free retirement school. You can get a lot of information just by glancing around and find the topics that are most relevant to you now. Thanks for listening.
Just one more thing before you take off. Is it time to design your new life after you graduate from the world of full-time work? Go to retirementwisdom.com and schedule a call today with Joe Casey. Working with an experienced coach like Joe can help you explore new possibilities and gain clarity on your future. Thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. See you next week.